What is up, and welcome back to 24 Minutes of A24, the podcast that takes a look at the A24 library 24 minutes at a time. I'm Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we are painting eggs and trying to figure out how to work FileMaker Pro as we talk about Problemista.
Alejandro is an aspiring toy designer from El Salvador, struggling to bring his unusual ideas to life in New York City. As time runs out on his work visa, a job assisting an erratic art world outcast becomes his only hope to stay in the country. This is A24's newest movie. This is interesting, and we'll talk about this and we'll get into this. I feel like this movie was supposed to come out like 9 months ago. Like, it's been being kicked around by A24 for a while, right?
Yeah, I feel like we saw the first trailers for this over like maybe a year ago. And then I think it was due to the strike and stuff like that they pulled it, which was kind of interesting. But yeah, I feel like we've seen this movie or heard about this movie for such a long time.
You know, I'm glad that they pulled it because they are coming out some very good content on the A24 app where Julio Torres and Tilda Swinton are actually painting eggs and talking to each other about ghosts, which is really fun. So I'm glad that they waited. We'll talk about all of that and more. This movie obviously stars Julio Torres, Tilda Swinton, and Greta Lee. No, John Magaro with Greta Lee in this movie.
Unfortunately, that would have made it perfect.
That was a tough realization. When she came on the screen, I was like, oh. Past lives. And then I was like, no, that's not what we're here for.
That's wrong New York Greta Lee.
Wrong New York Greta Lee character. Okay, we're going to talk about Problemista, A24's newest film. We're going to talk about New York movies. We're going to talk about immigration stories in film. But first, I have one point of housekeeping, because Civil War, A24's most expensive and reportedly going to be best opening box office film that they've ever had when it opens. That's how it's tracking. Comes out in just under 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I want to put a pin in the Civil War conversation real quick, but they have started, A24 being they, have started their IMAX rerun monthly program. We kind of broke this down a little bit in a prior episode and talked about how we hope it continues and hope we see other movies, what movies we would want to see. But Ex Machina happened last night. By the time this pod comes out, it'll be 2 nights ago. And I got to go. Ben, you didn't get to go. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was only showing at one theater, and I unfortunately had put off seeing Problemista too long. So I did that instead. I did it for the pod.
Did it for the pod. Well, I did go to Ex Machina in IMAX for the pod. And I will just say, I have not revisited Ex Machina since like we covered it here on the show. I think it was like one of our first episodes, I'm pretty sure, because I remember like Uncut Gems, Midsommar, Ex Machina were like, these are the A24 stalwarts that like we got to kick off the show with. So I haven't revisited in quite some time. God damn, this movie is good. Like, this movie is really good. And I know the IMAX situation is kind of a little fickle, depending on like how nerdy you want to get about it, because a movie like this, Hereditary and Uncut Gems, they are not filmed for IMAX. They're not filmed with IMAX cameras. They are essentially just being blown up to fit on an IMAX screen and to have an IMAX sound system, which truthfully, like with Ex Machina, I have no problem with, because I still think it was a fantastic experience. At my screening, there was like 60 or 70 people on a Wednesday night for like a one-time screening, which was cool. And I forgot how complex this movie really is. And I broke down a bunch of my random thoughts on my Letterboxd review. But can we just like steal 5 minutes to talk about Ex Machina for a second?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Will Oscar Isaac ever be in a project like this again? Or is he too big? Because he's fucking fantastic in this movie.
He's so good. I mean, that's the thing with this movie, is like the core three are all amazing in this film.
Like, perfect. It's a holy trifecta, holy trinity.
Yeah, they're all batting 1,000 on this. I don't know if he'll ever be in anything like this again. Like, I don't know if you can be once you reach that level of superstardom until like much later on. But who knows? We'll see. I mean, I would love to see him in something like that. And I did confirm Ex Machina episode number 3 of this podcast.
Wow. Episode number 3.
Episode 3. We did Uncut Gems, Good Time, and then Ex Machina.
That's so incredible.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute.
You know, unfortunately with Problemista and all of the new things coming out that we're trying to catch up on, we didn't plan like a full Garland A24 rewatch because this would have been that. Okay, next point of contention here. I agree with you on the Oscar Isaac front, and that's why I asked that question, because I don't think he'll be in anything this small scale ever again. I think this is the funniest Oscar Isaac has ever been in a film, and probably not the hottest, but like the creepiest hottest. What do we got to do? Same vein of question here. What do we got to do to get Domhnall Gleeson or Alicia Vikander like leading a movie again? Like what do we got to do? Because I'm looking at Domhnall Gleeson's IMDb, obviously known for Ex Machina, known for About Time, known as General Hux in the Star Wars saga. He's got a movie coming out in the future that is currently in production, I guess, with Aiza Gonzalez, Natalie Portman, and John Krasinski. And it's another Guy Ritchie film. It's called Fountain of Youth. Other than that, my guy's been voicing Peter Rabbit. Like that's what I'm seeing for the last five fucking years. Hey, what happened? He's so good in this movie.
He's amazing, and so is she. I mean, I guess they tried to get her to be Tomb Raider. I don't know how well that did. We've seen her in some A24 stuff since then, Green Knight and Irma Vep, which we covered.
Irma Vep, good. When I saw her show up on screen, I was like, ooh, she was really good in Irma Vep. Like that, I feel like that's a show nobody talked about. Of course, we covered it here on the pod, but like Alicia Vikander, great actress.
Yeah, she's wonderful. And a year later, after Ex Machina, she's in one of my favorite movies, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Just a great, great movie. If you haven't seen it, check out Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Man, I just, you know, it just made me sad that like that Ex Machina really was an era of film that like we're just past now, unfortunately. Yeah. 10 years ago, right? Like comes out in 2014. And that's just like a microcosm of what projects could get made and would get made at that time. The Oscar Isaac vein, we're way too big now. Okay. I think that's kind of my Ex Machina thoughts. I just needed to vent for a second that Hollywood is failing us by not getting these three in movies again.
I'm with you. And you know what? I'm going to take 1 second for a little shameless self-promotion here. If you haven't been listening to the Movie Draft Podcast, you should check it out.
You should listen to that.
An upcoming episode we have is the 2010s directorial debuts, and Ex Machina qualifies. So we'll see if it gets ranked on there or not. But
yeah,
check it out. Little shameless self-promotion here.
I have not even started prepping for that pod yet because I've been busy prepping for the A24 auction draft that is also coming up on that Movie Draft Podcast. That's going to be crazy
also
times.
Also qualifies for. There we go.
Okay, my very last Ex Machina question before we talk about Problemista, two very different films. Is Ex Machina Alex Garland's best script, or is it so good because you have Domhnall Gleeson and Oscar Isaac playing so well together and selling the script? Because just from my rewatch last night, it's an excellent script. It's an excellent film. But there are definitely moments where I was like, oh, classic Alex Garland. Like you're just flattening the nail with like the biggest part of the hammer where it's like, we got it, and then you continued to do it. And so, like, when that happened in Ex Machina, I was like, ah, we see that in Men. Like, oh, we see that in his other stuff. And, like, I just wonder if it plays better in Ex Machina because you have such a great trifecta of people that are selling even the really oversold parts.
I think it might be his best script. And this is someone who has great scripts. He has 28 Days Later. He has Sunshine, he has Dread, which is also a great movie, but this is the first one that he's directing, and so I almost feel like he maybe put a little bit more into this, knowing that he'd be behind the scenes here and not just writing it. This might just be his best thing on all fronts.
Yeah, might be. I don't know. We'll find out next week because we're going to rewatch Men, and then we're going to watch Civil War the week after that.
I can't believe it still.
Your silence scared me. I didn't know what to do. I'm so fucking excited. I'm so excited. Okay, we'll save that excitement for the end of the show. We'll talk a little bit about our excitement for Civil War, maybe, because I did see the first 10 minutes of Civil War. It did play at South by Southwest. It played the night that I left, unfortunately. That's right. So I did not get to see it at the fest.
Now you were stuck at the airport and you could have seen it.
I literally could have seen it. My flight was delayed so long that I could have seen it. Instead, I had to eat a bunch of pizza and just do an AMA on Twitter, which was brutal. Honestly, I had a great time, but like I could have been watching Civil War.
Yeah.
Okay, Problemista. Let's talk about it. Let's do general thoughts first. What did you think of Problemista, Ben?
Oh, man. It's been like 24 hours and I still don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
interesting.
I know that I liked it. I know that I thought it was well done. This felt to me like sometimes you'll hear, you know, comedians when they watch other comedians, like the best review they can get is that they don't necessarily laugh at a joke, but they'll just say like, that's funny. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, you know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about? It's like, rather than really like chuckling at the joke, they'll just be like, oh, that's funny, actually. And that's how I felt. Not that I'm a comedian by any means. That's how I felt watching this movie. I don't know when I laughed at all. And that might be a symptom of me being the only person in the theater. You know, that was also a bummer. But can you
speak on that for a second? Because you got me really good on that one. I didn't really pull the rug out from under me.
Yeah, I mean, I sent you like a snapshot of my phone with all the seats, and I was like, jokingly, just said full house, and you're like, "Fuck yeah, man, let's go!" Like, my theater was almost full too. And I was like, "Oh no, dude, this means the opposite of what you think it is." Like, I'm the one seat that's sold in this theater, and there's everything else is empty.
Well, because all the other seats were color coded green on the ticket, and so I was like, "Oh, green is good. We sold these seats."
Yeah, exactly.
I was just like, my brain like took over. Took the day off. So I'm sorry you had to go this alone.
Yeah, I think someone snuck in at one point, but I still just like felt alone. And so because of that, as I'm watching this, there are so many things that are happening, and I'm just thinking like, that's funny. Mm-hmm. But that was it. I wasn't like, it wasn't getting any chuckles out of me, you know what I mean? So okay. I could appreciate it, but then when it was over, I was like, was that good? Like, I didn't laugh once really, but I could recognize that there was a lot of funny stuff happening in here, like the satire, like there's so much great stuff. Julio Torres like wrote on SNL. He was one of the producers on the Chris Gethard show, which I also like loved, and that's also just like crazy and kind of like absurd humor. So I enjoy his humor here. It wasn't a thing where it's like I don't like this, like I liked it all, but it was just, I don't know if it was too smooth or something for me. I was like, man, all these jokes they're playing great. Like, they're funny, everything he's saying. And some of it's like kind of meaningful and heartfelt too. Like when we see that kind of like Escher type room that's all connected to another room, it's connected to another room, and he can't like make any progress anywhere. I think you maybe see that in the trailer. Like, that's a really great, you know, reflection or analogy of like, I can't get a visa without getting a job, and I can't get a job unless I live here, and I can't live here if I don't have a visa. And just like this whole, like, how do you do this? I don't know. I think it's so well done. I really, again, I enjoyed it. Like, I know I had a good time, but when I left, I was just like, I feel like I just sat there for 2 hours and I didn't like respond to it at all, but like, it was good. Wow. I don't know. Yeah. What was your experience like? Was it better with other people there?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It was much better with other people. So this is interesting because this really opens the door wide open for so many things that I could say. First of all, being shout out A24 for like holding off, for putting this in theaters, for making this like a New York LA thing and then bringing it wide. Like, the word of mouth is very good on this movie, and the theatrical experience that I had at an almost full showing at a local theater was fantastic. There was somebody in this theater that initially I was a little put off because their laugh was loud and it was really obnoxious. And I was like,
prominent laugh. Yeah.
Yes. I was like, are we sure this movie's that funny? we could probably tone it down. And then they did that for about 10 minutes. And then we got like 30 or 40 minutes into this movie, and I was like, okay, this is a pretty fucking funny movie. Like, I'm on board. Like, that energy kind of swelled over me and took me over. And I was laughing probably like second or third most, not with a loud coarse haws or anything, but you know, I was enjoying it. I was laughing to myself. And I do think the theater experience played a large role in that. With that being said, I would say like 50% of my theater was like over 60 years old, which I thought was really interesting demographic.
Yeah.
And I don't think the movie connected with them the same way it connected with probably a Gen Z or millennials or anybody else that was in the theater. I thought it was really funny. I thought it felt like a very kind of innovative, smart, very like self-aware take on a very simple like movie that's like, oh, we have to go get these things. Like that's all we really have to do. Like we have to go get these paintings and that's how we solve our problems. And it is quite simple, but it's done by Julio Torres and especially Tilda Swinton in like such a outlandish way that also manages to kind of take on this immigration story and this like meta text of the U.S. immigration status and the U.S. as a whole and corporate America. And like, there's a lot of things that it touches on quite well.
Yeah.
The usually for me, reoccurring jokes burn out pretty fast for me, like in a film. So in the case of this movie, like FileMaker Pro is a joke that is used all the way until the very end. I actually got a lot of mileage out of that until we got to the end. And I was like, well, okay, wow. I feel like I've heard this title 16,000 times now. So I gotta say,
this is a hot take from the I'm Reigning It In King over here, Mr. Maestro himself. I don't know how many episodes we already had on.
Listen, sometimes movies need to rein it in. You gotta listen to the greats.
They do. Maybe
sometimes they gotta rein it in. Just listen to the greats. Yeah. You know, he hasn't won an Oscar yet, but he will.
It played that a lot for sure.
It played it a lot. But on the other hand, a lot of the stuff that Tilda Swinton does, a lot of the physical comedy that we get from Julio Torres worked on me the entire time. I think it's just something about their dynamic and their energy that by the time you get to the end of the film is so like fruitful and is just so joyous that I think it works really well. So all that to say, I did have quite a good time with this movie. I think it's a very positive movie going experience. Is very good movie for the year. Mm-hmm. Like, is it one of the best? No, but it's really good and I like it. And I think it is quite an impressive directorial debut. I know A24, obviously renowned as of late, especially for directorial debuts and putting resources behind that. What did you think on that front being a debut for Julio Torres?
I thought it was great. I thought this movie was super creative and just like he was able to, you know, express stuff in his mind that just, like the surreal nature of using Craigslist. It was like, yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. Like he somehow was able to put that in a person, you know? And it's just like, man, yeah, he nailed that. And just, you know, some of the stuff that we've all thought, you know, just the overdraft fees. It's like, how are you protecting
incredible
me by doing
moment
that,
in the movie.
You know?
Incredible.
And it's so well done because that's like an old joke, you know, everyone knows and people have felt that frustration before. But he's able to spin it in a new way in this movie where she like shoots him in the name of Bank of America and stuff. It's like, Jesus, like, yeah, it's well done. I think that's one thing I appreciate about A24 because it feels like they let a lot of these directorial debuts come from the actual voices of the directors. There's not a lot of stepping in and, you know, changing things. So I appreciate that about them.
Yeah, it does feel very unique and very individualistic. Lots of moments like that throughout the film where I was like, oh, this is pretty innovative. I think it's pretty light, like on its feet. And I think it kind of understands what it's doing. There's a lot of interesting visual choices. They work most of the time for me, not all of the times. We kind of break away to like some plays and some costumes and some other things that I think are good in general. So I think this is a pretty good directorial debut. I don't think it's like fantastic, or I don't think it's something. It's really tough coming off of the heels of Past Lives, of like the Past Lives and the After Sun kind of like pocket of directorial debuts. Those are 5-star films, and so it's really hard to kind of compare to those because that's like really that elite level of filmmaking. This is very good for what it is, And it's hard to take a primarily comedy-driven narrative to heights like that. So I think he did a pretty good job with that.
This is five-star creatively, for sure, I think.
Yeah, yes.
You know, maybe absolutely. Not a five-star movie, but like what he pulled off creatively is really good. Stars. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah, for sure.
No, I agree. Tilda Swinton, I haven't seen everything she's been in, but this might be the best she's ever been. I was just so hooked into every word that she was saying. And I think that the energy she brings to this movie, we'll break it down kind of in the true cinema moments, but I've just never seen a sporadic person like that on screen before. I don't think. It was magical.
She played it really well. She does do a wonderful job, and that's like a tightrope to walk, you know, to play this character as obnoxious as she is while still maintaining some humanity where we kind of care a little bit, or at least Alejandro has to care a little bit and feel like there's some redeeming quality there. So yeah, I think she does a wonderful job. This is the house of Michael Clayton though. So that is the best Tilda Swinton has ever been in my eyes.
You're not
but
wrong.
She is fantastic in this movie, not to undercut that. She does a wonderful job here. She's got some funny delivery because she's like the humor of the movie. Alejandro, Julio Torres's character, is the straight person, you know. It's like it's the subdued, very quiet, you know, whatever performance. But yeah, Tilda has to like do the pupusas joke, you know, like all that kind of stuff. Like she has to deliver that, and she does wonderful. She's great.
Yeah, there's a scene. I don't think we have it listed on our True Cinema, so I'll quickly say it now. But there's a scene in a moment when her and Alejandro go out for lunch the very first time, and she does this entire bit with the waiter that just overtook me, and it worked so well. How she treats the waiter so shittily and is so funny while she's doing it, but the waiter also like tries to stand up for himself a little bit. And her misconstrued ideas of what vegan means and who is vegan and how Alejandro is allergic to everything and cannot have anything, I think is really, really funny. When I walked away from this movie, I definitely felt like, oh man, that'll be really fun to own and like just put on one day when like when I don't like really want to get too invested in something, but I want something funny. Like I think this has that kind of quality. I also wanted to say that Julio Torres does a little waddle in this movie. Every single time he does this waddle where he walks somewhere to like a short distance, he'll like walk to a window or to a desk or whatever. Unbelievably funny stuff from him.
That is one joke that did not get old for me throughout the entire thing. It was just that little, the waddle, bounce, whatever. I was like, this is actually really kind of funny to see. So, that worked perfectly. If anyone has seen or is familiar with Michel Gondry, this kind of reminded me of that. It's like Michel Gondry light, you know, like the beginning of his career. I could see the correlation there with Julio Torres's directing style and Michel Gondry. So if you're into any of that stuff, like check this out.
Yeah. I think it's also, you know, obviously very importantly an immigration tale and a narrative and a commentary on that. You mentioned the kind of visual language that Julio Torres chooses to use to demonstrate that, I think is done very wisely and smartly. And what I respect the most about this movie is that it does not at any time like stray too far away from that as a core text. Like we go a little bit in waves and ebbs and flows of like more comedy or more like get these paintings or more in a direction or other. But it always cycles back to Alejandro's core problem. And that is the U.S. immigration system. I thought it tackled that very, very well.
Yeah, I think it did a great job. Even showing, you know, the immigration, the whatever office that he goes to, you know, they're dealing with people that are there trying to get visas, yet no one that works there speaks Spanish. You know, it's just like that's how bad the system is, which also leads to kind of a funny segment, you know, where he gets offered a job, like everything that he would need. He's like, no, I'm good. I'm going to do this like other thing yeah. instead. Like, all right, dude, like you have everything you could possibly want. But yeah, it's a really interesting tale again of just like the way he shows the circular nature of the system of like, you need this to get this, but you can't have that until you have this, but you can't have that until you have this. It's like they make it so, so difficult. And then also kind of funny that we just find out later on that he didn't necessarily have to be in America. It's just that like the website the for Hasbro just doesn't have other, you know, like, oh, that's what this is all based off of. Like there's no actual rule that you have to be in America, but it's just not an option to select that. Like that's actually kind of funny that it plays out that way.
Yeah. I think it's really, really wise. Last thing before we get into true cinema, Isabella Rossellini narrates this.
Yeah.
Elite. Very, very good decision. Of course, she's in Marcel the Shell with Shoes On as well. She's been kind of like getting into a lot of A24 projects recently. I know she's got a collection that's on Criterion Channel streaming right now. I think she was a perfect narrator for this film.
She was so good. Like, have her narrate every movie, even if it doesn't need it. You know what I mean? Like, yes. Just have her do it. Have her do Captain America and the New World Order or whatever it's going to be. Like, have her narrate that. I don't care. Just like, have her narrate everything. She's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's an era of Hollywood we should go exclusively towards. Every single movie has narration. I just don't even care what it is. Doesn't even matter. All narrated by her.
Isabella Rossellini. Yeah, for sure. 100%.
I think that would be incredible. That's the era we need to get into. Okay, let's do true cinema. Let's break this movie down just a little bit deeper. First, we've got the intro in El Salvador. This is when Alejandro is a kid and his mom is basically drawing. And she's drawing is these very imaginative, like kind of magical buildings to protect Alejandro. Because, of course, you know, a mother's fear and a parent's fear is that they will get out into the big bad world and things will go bad, which again, I think is a very nice undercurrent to this movie that we loop back into at the very final moments. I thought it was a really cool visual choice to start with something like that out there because it makes the transition to Tilda Swinton's character much more palatable.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's also an interesting and it really paid off for me, the ending of this movie, because it is kind of bookended with the beginning, you know, of like the monster in the cave or whatever. Yeah, those like buildings, a toy, like playset, whatever you want to call it. I thought it was super, super cool and well designed.
Next on the list, I've got that Alejandro gets a job at Freeze Corp because he keeps getting denied at Hasbro. he lives in a very small room with these roommates that I thought were pretty funny. The times that we got to spend with them, I would have liked a little bit more kind of that world. I thought it was, I thought it was interesting to see Alejandro interact with like those people and their complete disregard for his grueling process that he's going through and that he can't figure out. So he gets a job at Freeze Corp. He's overseeing Bobby, who's played by RZA and. Mm-hmm. Basically is this artist that draws eggs and paints eggs and has decided to freeze himself so he can live in the future. And what I think is really funny about everything about Freeze Corp is that the introduction video that we get to what Freeze Corp is basically ends with them saying like, we don't know how to wake you up, but we're working on it and we'll figure it out in the future.
I loved it. I thought, you know, the RZA, he was fine in this. I think it's hilarious that they called him Bobby because, like, one of his nicknames or whatever from Wu-Tang Clan is Bobby Digital. So I thought that was kind of funny that they threw that in there. It's like, that's a nice little nod to that. And just this whole sequence, though, is hilarious because, like, he unplugged the backup generator. Like, he didn't even unplug the generator. Like,
not the even the real batteries.
In trouble, but it's like, nothing happened. But that's that. I mean, dude, I don't want to get too ahead of myself. That is one of the moments that really kind of got me is, like, was the blue plug, like, was it unplugged? He's like, it's plugged in now. You know? Just like, that's a really good way to answer that, dude. Like, that was really good. This whole sequence, though, it was really funny.
Yeah, that was good. So Elizabeth Tilda Swinton's character is married to Bobby, and she essentially is tasked with overseeing him and dealing with the exorbitant fees that she keeps getting piled onto her bill. And then that is essentially how Elizabeth and Alejandro meet. She is in that office dealing with the manager, and Alejandro gets called into the manager's office and fired the next day because he did trip over the backup generator. Again, one of the funnier bits of the movie for sure. I just think Julio Torres's like slight mannerisms and his like really uncomfortable facial expressions are hilarious, because like I also have the same expressions when I'm listening to this person. I just don't know what to do, but I also like want to retort. And I thought that was really, really funny. Okay, firing in the office, we talked about that. Next, I have the Craigslist montage. You kind of touched on this briefly. This is where Alejandro starts to like try to sell things on the sidewalk, like these hair care products. And he essentially starts doing this, and then he finds out that Hasbro has stolen one of his toy ideas that he put in his application. That is a Cabbage Patch Kid that has a cell phone. And the very first time we hear about this idea is in his application. And he mentions something along the lines of like, oh, look, she got a text. And it's, you know, I think it's like her friend's butthole because they're sexting each other.
Yeah.
And I was so caught off guard, and I was like, that's incredibly brilliant and really pushing the awkward boundary of like, okay, this is a kid's toy we're talking about here, but I see, Alejandro, you've got potential.
There's some funny stuff. Like, we see some in the notebook, like someone gets shown to us, like the toy truck that has like a deflating tire, you know,
so it's funny.
Like fill up again, which is funny.
The slinky that never goes down the stairs because the child needs to go on the journey too.
Yeah. And one that was in the book that I liked, I wish we would have seen, it was called The Oil Spilled Duck. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't imagine what that would have been like. So yeah, these toy ideas I think were hilarious because like, yeah, they're not supposed to have fun. I think it was so good.
Yeah, I think one of them is like a Barbie with its fingers crossed behind its back is really, really funny. Yeah, the Craigslist montage is good. It was probably like my least favorite bit of the movie, just because like, to me, it felt kind of in the vein of like a Dix the Musical situation where it's like, let's really try to be funny here. And the rest of the movie doesn't feel that way to me. The rest of the movie is very core focused on like, let's tell Alejandro's story and let's be character focused and we're funny along the way. This is just like a funny break, and it just like doesn't work for me on that level. Next on the list here, I have the apology letter to Dahlia, who is Greta Lee's character. I want to say a couple of things about this. First off, Greta Lee was not in this movie long enough. That's just like plain and simple. She's in this movie for like 4 minutes, maybe.
Should have been in there more, for sure.
What the hell?
I thought we were getting more. Like,
she's billed. Like, she's like the third build on, the trailer.
Teaser in the trailer. Like, I thought she was going to be like a focal point, which she is. She's just like so small.
So small. And once she is done, like, she never comes back up, which I thought was a bummer. So I guess Bobby was having an affair with her, and Bobby had gifted one of his most prized paintings to her. I believe they called it Blue Egg on Yellow Satin, is how Elizabeth kept referring to it, which I thought was really funny. Like, again, a reoccurring joke that worked for me. So Alejandro types up this apology letter. We're led to believe it's from Elizabeth. Gives it to Dahlia in hopes that they can get this painting back, because it's their 13th that they need to complete their program and their showcase of 13 eggs. And we go through this really emotional moment that actually works like on an emotional level of Elizabeth basically apologizing and saying, like, I'm so sorry that I wrote such a bad review for you in my piece. Like, I didn't even look at your art. Like, I didn't mean to impact your career and all of these things. And then we get a smash cut to Alejandro printing out this letter and not showing it to Elizabeth, even though she's asking what's written. Really funny shit. Really, really, really funny.
I mean, it's hilarious stuff. This was the one part in the movie that I did like audibly laugh at. And it's the line, because like throughout the film, we understand that Tilda Swinton's character does this stuff where she like talks negatively about someone that's not like in her life anymore, like her old assistant.
Yeah.
And like, oh, she was a drunk.
She thought she was on drugs because her shoes were dirty.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, she was in the alleyway. And then, you know, accused her of like stealing an ink cartridge to fund a trip to Italy. Oh, just like
incredible.
And she said all this shit about like Greta Lee too. And then they leave her house and she says, like, do you see all those children in there? And he's like, oh, they're all for all from different fathers. And then Julio's just like, I think it's a daycare. And for that got me. That got me for sure. I was just like, that's actually really funny that she's just like, oh, she's probably just sleeping with everyone. Look at all these kids and all these different dads. You know, he's like, dude, it's a daycare. So good.
And that's what works so well about Tilda Swinton's character of Elizabeth. She is so blunt. She just did. She just says exactly what comes into her head. I would have enjoyed a little bit more understanding of Elizabeth. I know this is Alejandro's story, and I understand that. And like Elizabeth is just his sponsor or his sponsor to be, but it would have been really interesting to dive a little bit deeper into her relationship with Bobby and how she got the way she is. Because when she first gets with Bobby, we get some flashbacks and she is not this manic. She is not this way. And so I think we're missing a little bit of a bridge there. And I would have liked that. But moments like these are what like wrote me back into really enjoying her character. Next on the list, I have this quote unquote dragon showdown. A lot of stuff that kind of takes place in the middle, but this is kind of where I was talking how it's like, let's go get the things. And that's kind of what we're doing in this kind of part of the movie. Essentially, we have more FileMaker Pro problems. And this is where we get the big emotional explosion between Elizabeth and Alejandro. Elizabeth is now in Maine with her new assistant, her hot assistant. And Alejandro is stuck in New York. And she wants Alejandro to put all of the information on CD-ROMs and overnight them to her so she can make sure that they all match. He has to pay like, you know, $250 to overnight these CDs. And he goes to do it and it declines. He goes to the ATM to get cash and he comes to find out he has like negative $470 on his account. Really funny. The wipe away to reveal the negative is really funny. And this is where we get that Bank of America bit where he goes on like a 4-minute monologue about like why the corporate banking system of America is like so fucked up and why it's so bad. And initially I was turned off because I was like, oh boy, like our script has taken a really hard, like heavy handed turn of like, I understand we're criticizing things here. But then we get the physical and the visual bit of the basically Alejandro begging the banker, like, just hear me out. Like, just understand where I'm coming from. The banker's like, no, I side with Bank of America, and shoots him in the fucking head. It's so funny.
It is so good. It is so, so well done. It's a hilarious scene. I mean, the whole, she's like, yeah, we take out $35 and it's for your protection. It's like, do I look protected? Like, do you think I'm protected?
And,
like,
and this is the part where we kind of get the visual play of like, he's on a sound or like a play stage and he physically doesn't look, he's like under a bunch of rubble and he doesn't have any armor and other things like this.
Yeah. And I mean, this whole, the sequence, you know, with Elizabeth as the dragon and things like that. Like, I thought it was an interesting way to showcase like their relationship and the dynamic of what's going on. But so much funny stuff here too. Just, you know, getting the CDs burnt so she has one at every house. And he's just like, I don't know how you're going to install it on your iPad. You know, it's just like, just pushing back on her as much as he can. And the other guy is just like, man, he's just kind of the worst. But yeah, I thought this was, that Bank of America scene played really well.
It did. Yeah. And this is kind of the part where we understand Elizabeth is really unhinged. Like, she might actually not kind of be as caring to Alejandro as we previously thought. She basically, you know, they kind of go at it over the phone, and this is where Alejandro is able to get her a show, and the show is not with a prestigious art house. It is not somewhere that she wanted it to be. And so they kind of have this very sharp verbal exchange over the phone, and we are kind of met with a visual telling in a play style of Alejandro being a knight and Elizabeth being a dragon. And I thought that was a pretty interesting way to tell this. I think it does take us out of the movie, at least personally, took me out of the movie like a little bit, because we're like bouncing between, oh, this is actually happening, and now we're living a metaphor. But I understand, I think it's a bold choice to go in this direction and to represent it with such like a fable allegory kind of mindset.
Yeah, I think it worked for me, and especially at the very beginning when we first saw it, because that's when someone explains to Alejandro, I forget exactly the context of it, but they talk about Elizabeth being a Hydra. Like, if you come up with one problem, she's going to come back at you with two. And at that point in the metaphor, in the storytelling, we see the shadows of their characters. He cuts off the dragon's head, and then all of a sudden, like, two heads come back in. You know, it's like, oh, okay, it is kind of interesting to see, because then she does, then we cut back to her, and she comes up with this problem that isn't related to anything at all, like about her website or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Alejandro's just like, well, what's it about? Like, is it about this or is it about that? But it's a great way, I think, to learn a little bit about her character, and just like, even if you solve a problem, she's going to find more. Like, there's no pleasing this woman.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it was an interesting like directorial decision for sure. Next, I wrote down, and I might have kind of reversed these a little bit, but that's okay. The cleaning boy kink. Now, this was interesting. This was an interesting part of the movie because it very plainly exemplifies like, the system is broken and the system is not working for Alejandro. And now he has to stoop to a level that he has tried so hard to refrain from.
Yeah.
And a level that Craigslist and the physical embodiment that Craigslist is so willingly offers up. And this is to go to a gentleman's house and to perform a cleaning boy kink and basically be like a call boy for him. And while doing this, he's cleaning windows. And it's an awkward scene, and it really reminded me of Dream Scenario and the moment we get with Nick Cage and kind of his girl that dreams of him and how we have a weird sexual tension there. So it kind of reminded me of that, but I thought it was equally funny because of Julio Torres's comedy style.
Yeah.
And the way that he says, like, oh, did you want me to keep cleaning? Like, why we do this? Do you want me to scrub? Like, what do you want me to do? And he almost falls out of the pants. There's a lot of funny bits. Kind of awkward, though. Kind of weird.
Yeah, it's definitely awkward. I as we're watching this, I was like, man, he's using a lot of Windex. Like, he's spraying this thing down so much. He's going to town on this. And but it does lead to some good physical humor where he's like, take off your pants, you know. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then the backpack, you know, he's still got his backpack on with no pants on, just like cleaning the windows. And it led to some good humor. And then I think, you know, after everything has transpired and he's getting paid, he kisses the John, like he kisses him almost like kind of passionately, because he just isn't used to this kind of exchange, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was an interesting idea as well, to have him do that, to kind of take it maybe more personally than he's supposed to. And then, yeah, after that, just to tie into it, we go back to his apartment where he's sleeping on the couch, but now there's like six people there, you know? He's like, oh, I'm not going to be able to sleep here. And we get Meg Stotler shows up. She's always great. So,
Was she the person on the couch?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So what is she from? Because I totally recognize her. Oh, I recently watched Sometimes I Think About Dying, and she was in that film.
She is
a fantastic actress.
Yeah, she's awesome. I'm trying to think. She's in Hacks, which is a really good TV show. She plays an assistant on that. But yeah, she's super funny.
Yeah, we got to get her in more stuff. She's got four upcoming projects, I guess. So that's really exciting. Nice. I understand the intent behind the scene, and correct me if I'm wrong, and somebody had said this that was like near me in the theater, I'm pretty sure he only gets paid $40. Like,
it didn't look like he got a lot.
It doesn't look like we're dealing with hundreds here, and it looks like we only got two bills. So I don't know. Worth it? No, I don't think so. But
I'm not sure.
But in Alejandro's case, obviously a very hardcore visual signifier that he has nowhere else to turn, and he has to maintain this citizenship and this work visa, and he has to do what he has to do. Then we get essentially Elizabeth freezing, and the sponsorship of him. Now, this happens after they get their show. It's one wall and not at all what they thought it would be. And leading into this, going to the show, they leave Blue, Egg on Yellow Satin, at like the tram station. That was funny. That whole bit was really, really good and really funny. They end up selling all of their art online or through the catalog, whatever it may be. And so Alejandro is out getting wine. He calls his mom to kind of tell her the good news and celebrate a little bit. And then he gets a voice memo from Elizabeth that says, like, hey, I've drank the coolant and the freezing material. And probably by the time you get back to the house, I'll be frozen for the future. I was like, damn, that's like, that's really cold, like literally cold of her to just like freeze herself. I get it, but also like really short-sighted from her. But she does sponsor him, right? So
yeah, she does hold up her end, or does her best, you know, to hold up her end towards that, which is good. And then giving him, you know, the letter and just, you know, telling him about the Hasbro thing, I think works well as well. It was interesting. I'm surprised that it took me by surprise. It's like, yeah, I guess eventually she was going to want to freeze herself to end up with Bobby. But I just didn't expect it to happen in that fashion.
Yeah, I didn't either. Which I think is a little abrasive at first, but then I think it ultimately works because Alejandra's journey has been nothing but abrasive. And it's fitting that we get strapped with that as well. He gets back to the apartment. She is frozen, but she luckily does sponsor him and write out like a letter and all of these things in her voice memo. She does mention, like, I don't know who the sponsorship letter is supposed to go to, probably the president, which I thought was hilarious. Nobody else in my theater laughed at that. I thought it was really fucking funny. And again, like, just a very, very wry, wise way to like get at the system a little bit more, which I think was good. Then we get two, I got two more scenes here. The Hasbro conversation. Basically, Alejandro takes Elizabeth's aura and her energy, goes to Hasbro because she is able to get him a name, which very good life advice from Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're ever conversing with an entity, like you're always going to lose. Get a name, which I thought was really, really wise.
Yeah.
And he goes and he gets a name and he talks to this person and is like, here's what's going to happen. You're going to give me a job. You're going to fix your application. You're going to fix the dropdown so I can be in El Salvador. And you're going to sponsor me. It's really expensive and it's really laborious, but you're going to do it. And I can't wait to work with you every day. And this guy's like, yes, that sounds so good. hilarious way to end the movie.
Yeah, it was so good. Yeah, because he even addresses it. He's like, my tone may have come across as a little abrasive, you know, just we haven't seen this side of him at all throughout the whole film. So it's good to see him actually take Elizabeth's words to heart and kind of channel her.
Yeah. And then we got one final one. This is where I have questions for you. I'm really curious if this worked for you or not, because I don't think it worked for me. 322 years later, we get Elizabeth in the future, we get Bobby in the future, and we actually get Alejandro in the future. It turns out he lived a very fruitful life with his mother and made lots of toys. He's now old in this future. Elizabeth and Bobby, obviously the same age, and Elizabeth is berating a server who will not serve her wine, which that energy is like something I missed in just Alejandro part. And they reconnect and we once more get the FileMaker Pro joke. This time just absolutely didn't work for me at all. And they meet up in the future and we kind of understand their lives a little bit more. Did this kind of coda, did this work for you?
It didn't until the very last line, when he talks about the monster in the cave, you know, cause she's kind of tucked back in that little hallway berating, you know, this server dude. It's like, oh, okay, this, I like the book ending, the matching of this from the beginning of the movie. But overall, I just like probably could have done without it.
Yeah. I feel like I really could have done without like the future jumping. But what I thought was most effective about this, and I think it comes like in between, kind of scattered in between these moments, is where we get the narrator basically saying, like, there are puzzle pieces that are everywhere that you go in life. And they're literally the physical puzzle pieces that his mother has been drawing and working on throughout the entire film, which, again, like a really nice bookend. And some people view them as obstacles. Others will view them as puzzle pieces and will be able to overcome them and solve them and put them together. And while it definitely isn't as powerful interstitched with like this future version that we're getting, was a really good way to kind of bring home like, hey, this has been Alejandro's like immigration journey, and everywhere he goes, there are hurdles that he has to try to solve, even though he has none of the other pieces. Was a really, really good way to kind of finish it off.
Yeah. I think it ended wonderfully. Like I said, the future stuff was kind of hit or miss. I felt a little weird about it, but overall I feel like they tied it all together really nicely.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. True cinema moment.
I mean, it has to be the part that got an audible laugh out of me, you know,
the daycare
kids
part
from all these different fathers, you know, that was probably my favorite part.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good. I'd say really, I really enjoyed, like the firing in the office. I thought that is probably some of the funniest stuff that we get in the movie. I think too, a lot of the things that we get with Tilda Swinton that are just like little sentences or words or quips that she does, really worked on me in this movie. So anytime she does something, kind of those mannerisms, I thought was great. But if I'm going with a scene, it's firing in the office. I think it's hilarious. Yeah. Okay. A1 act. We're going to do New York movies because this does take place in New York. Now, we did do, for an A1 act, we did do New York crime on episode 36. We talked about A Most Violent Year, a film that we have actually talked about twice on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Both times with Alden Diaz. Great conversations. Really great movie. If you haven't seen A Most Violent Year, speaking of Oscar Isaac, my lord, great film. But we've never just done New York movies. I have a pretty big list here, obviously. There's a lot of New York movies. This is not all-encompassing, but I have a good, healthy list here that I feel like will help loosen up some of the brain waves here if you think of something that might be off-list.
Okay.
I want to give a shout-out to Sophie Holsinger, our co-host of the Movie Draft podcast, for providing us with this list. This is on her Letterboxd. You can go follow her on there. I'm going to blow through these. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
I don't think so. I don't know. Whew, I got to prepare. Okay. Here we go. Problemista, obviously. Taxi Driver, After Hours, King of Comedy, Wolf of Wall Street, Goodfellas, You've Got Mail, When Harry Met Sally, Men in Black. Great that it's on this list. Crazy. Did you watch Men in Black growing up as a kid?
I can't believe you're stopping to talk about any like movie
six,
on here.
I'm like six in.
Yeah, of course I saw Men in
Dude,
Black. I've
man,
lived in
Men
America.
In Black fucking rocked. What a great movie. Do the Right Thing, Crooklyn, Moonstruck, The Squid and the Whale, Marriage Story, Frances Ha, The Meyerowitz Stories, new and selected, Ghostbusters, Big, Uncut Gems, Enchanted, Brooklyn, Elf, West Side Story, Inside Llewyn Davis, Past Lives, Breakfast at Tiffany's, Escape from New York, Spider-Man, really any of the Spider-Mans, Across the Spider-Verse, specifically as well, Rosemary's Baby, All That Jazz, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, the best Home Alone that there is, The Devil Wears Prada, The Intern, Good Time, Soul, Network, The Apartment, American Psycho, Kramer versus Kramer, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Black Swan, Rent, Tick, Tick, Boom, In the Heights, Made in Manhattan, Serendipity, If Beale Street Could Talk, Marathon Man, 13 Going on 30, Birdman, Variety. There's so many more movies than I thought were on this list. God, Jesus. Uptown Girls, Serpico, Cloverfield, Metropolitan, Saturday Night Fever, A Most Violent Year, Not Okay, Midnight Cowboy, Rounders, TMNT, Mutant Mayhem, The Gambler, The French Connection, Robot Dreams, The Taking of Pelham 123, the original and the remake, Joker, and Splash. That's a lot of movies.
That is.
That's like just not even scratching the surface of New York films.
I really love that you were like Taking of Pelham 123, the original and the remake. And earlier you did West Side Story and you just like, nope, just pick one. You don't get to choose.
You cannot have the original or the remake.
You just have to pick one. That's it. You don't get both. But you can have both. Taking a Pelham 1-2-3 is for sure.
I'm a Taking a Pelham 1-2-3 remake. That movie with Denzel and John Travolta is like guilty pleasure 101 for me. I love that movie, and nobody ever talks about the movie because it's a bad movie, but it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. Yeah. But
tough life out here for sure. Home Alone 2, definitely the better Home Alone, right? Lost in New York. I mean, only one of them's on this list, so just that, gonna throw that out there.
I guess that's true. I can't argue that. Yeah, it's true.
Do you have something you're going with? Are you going on list or are you going off?
Off list, baby.
Oh, Jesus. Dude, this list is huge. Sophie's gonna be so mad that you didn't go on her list.
Well, the first one I thought of that I'm not going to pick, though, is The Godfather. I don't know how that's not on this list.
What have we done?
Sophie, what the fuck, you know?
God damn it, Sophie. Get it together. This list is null and void.
Yeah, come on. But what I am going to go with is a movie that I want people to see that may not have seen it. It is a film called 25th Hour. It's from Spike Lee.
Uh-huh.
Starring Edward Norton, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Rosario Dawson, Anna Paquin. Brian fucking Cox is in it.
Wow.
It's so good. It is filmed shortly after 9/11. Takes place in New York. Like, we see like Ground Zero while they're still cleaning it up and stuff like that. Like, there's some amazing shots in this film. And it's about Edward Norton's character. And it's like the 24 hours that he lives before he goes to prison for selling drugs. So that's hence the title 25th Hour. But it's a wonderful film. It's what you do with your last 24 hours before you're going to jail. It's so good. Spike really capturing the spirit of New York in this film. Again, like in the wake of 9/11 and everyone, you know, getting along and being one. I think it's a super powerful film, and it's something that Spike directed that I don't think gets talked about enough. You know, it's not one of his more popular movies. So if I can get anybody to watch it for me talking about it, I recommend it. 25th Hour is fantastic. It was based on the debut novel from David Benioff, who went on to do Game of Thrones. So take that for whatever you want. Because he also wrote Troy. So, yeah, I don't know.
Whatever that means to you, I'm happy for you. Yeah. Are you excited for Spike Lee's High and Low, adaptation of Akira Kurosawa's 1963 film?
I don't know if I am. I'm scared.
Dude. Denzel Washington and Jeffrey Wright.
The cast is solid, but we had Brolin for Old Boy, and
yeah.
We saw what that turned into. Granted, Brolin is not Denzel or Jeffrey Wright, you know what I mean? I'm hopeful, but I'm dubious.
Yeah, I know you are. I think a lot of people are excited about it. God. Really big list, obviously. I think there's like some really critical ones here. I would hate myself, obviously, if I didn't put Uncut Gems in the running. Really a crucial and critical New York movie that ultimately takes place on the streets, which is pretty exciting. I mentioned The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, the new one. I'm probably going to get a lot of flack for that. But look, drink some beer. Give it a shot. I think you'll have a blast. I think you'll have a really good time.
You're a big Travolta head, right?
I wouldn't say I'm a big Travolta head, but the Travolta movies that I have a connection to, I will stand my ground. Okay. So Taking a Pelham 1-2-3 and Grease are two fantastic films.
Not what I thought you were going with. Okay, yeah, great.
And Blowout, incredible movie. Yeah, what a scream.
Yeah.
Did you think I was going to go with anything else?
I mean, fuck Pulp Fiction, you know what I mean? Like, who cares about that? No one cares about that movie.
Like, listen. It was number 6 on our collab draft on the Movie Drive podcast, so I'm just fucking, I mean, what do you want me to do?
Everybody at Sophie Holsinger, let her know that's just an insane take.
Fucking insane.
6 best movie, get out of here.
The one that I am going to go with is Francis Ha. It's sitting in my current 4 favorites on Letterboxd right now. I'm actually going to watch it after we record. Just throw it on for a little comfort. And I think it is a critical New York movie because it's all, you know, Francis just trying to find an apartment to live, just trying to understand that it's way too expensive to live on the West Side. Like, that's just how life goes, you know? So very good New York movie. Okay. A24 ranking for Problemista.
I think I'm going to go with... Oh, do you have it?
No, I said I was going to say I haven't really thought about mine.
I haven't either until I just like got ahead on this notes. Like, oh shit, yeah, I gotta rank this. I think I'd give it a solid B. Probably with room for a B plus. Like it leans that way, but I'm just gonna give it a B for now. Cause again, like I chuckled once in the movie, even though I know it's well done and it is funny. And I can't stop thinking about that. I was like, man, for someone who had a good time, I did not look like I had a good time. You know, I did not feel that way at all, but I did. It was fun. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a B.
One day we're gonna have to do a 24 minutes of 824 like theater meetup where we can ensure that you have a good theatrical experience, because I've never heard of a good theatrical experience in your shoes.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. Either no one's there and I'm just like, this is weird, or there's people there who are just talking or on their phone the whole time. Yeah.
We got to solve that. We got to come to your rescue. I'm probably going to go with a solid B as well. I think there's a lot of good stuff in this movie. I think it made me laugh quite a lot. I think it's a great, innovative, funny, light telling of like an immigration tale and the complexities of the U.S. immigration law. I think there's a lot to like there. I just don't think that it's like top tier A24. Like, I just don't think it's A material. I think it's quite a good movie. Like, I had a really good time with it. But nothing more than that. Okay. Any final thoughts on Problemista as a film?
Do you think A24 is going to sell any of those toys?
Oh my God. This is a great question. No, but they should. Here's the better question. Well, maybe not a better question, but
that's fine. You can one up my question. It's all right. Go ahead and declare right now. This is the better question.
This is the better of the question. Okay. Do you think they're going to sell the toys? Because it does seem like something A24 would do.
They're big on the merch, and they know the suckers like me will be like, yeah, I need a truck with a flat tire. Like, where else am I going to get that? So it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, Alejandro's idea is just coming to life. I want to know, are they ever going to sell the egg paintings? Because there is a video on the A24 app of Julio Torres and Tilda Swinton painting eggs and painting the paintings. And I believe that they now live in the A24 offices in New York. They posted that on their Instagram story. I DM'd them and I was like, how can I get one? And they never DM me back. So I don't know.
Fingers crossed. We'll see. Yeah.
It'd be great if they sold them. Speaking of merch, Love Lies Bleeding, new print just went on the website.
Yeah.
So nice. Okay. Next week on the pod, it's Alex Garland time. Yeah. We're back. We're doing a rewatch of Men. Yeah, we are.
We are indeed. We're rewatching Men.
Wow. Have you revisited Men since episode 37 when we went to go see it in a theater and we talked about it on the show?
Absolutely not. No one has revisited Men since then. There's no way. Okay. I'm curious to see how it plays out for sure. I'm surprised that we both gave it what we did that first time.
So this was back in our old ranking system. We didn't have the A24 ranking. We had kind of a three tier, a first cow, a good time, or a farewell. We both gave it a good time. I'd be really interested to know the details of that. I'm an Alex Garland truther. I know for a fact that I liked Men far more than you liked Men. I think it's very problematic, not the same way, but in a similar vein of like, hey, Maestro's got problems. I still love it. Hey, Men's got problems. I still love it. I just still think it's a great movie. So we're going to see how that plays out. I take it you're not too excited.
I'm curious about it. It kind of reminds me of Beau's Afraid. We're just like, I want to go back, and now that I know what it is, I want to rewatch it and see. It's still Jesse Buckley, you know what I mean? And I remember Rory Kinnear giving great performances. So I think the idea of it all just didn't land where I thought it was going to. So now that I know what it is, I am curious to rewatch it. Because, again, with our old ranking system, that good time could have been anything from a B to a D. You know what I mean? Like it covered so much ground. So it's just like, if it's not an A, it's not an F. Like, I don't know. There's the wide gamut here. So I'm curious to see how this plays on the rewatch.
I know that we did do a Jesse Buckley A1 act. I kind of want to bring that back because Jesse Buckley, she's our queen.
Yeah,
I love her. Yeah, I think we should do that. I'm really excited. Rewatch of Men. And then the week after, we're going into Civil War. Mm-hmm. Are you excited for Civil War at all?
I cannot wait for Civil War. I'm
very exciting.
Yeah,
really?
This is probably the thing I'm looking forward to the most this year. So I'm the cast looks fantastic. I think it's a really interesting idea. And I think when Alex Garland is on, he's on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I get the feeling this is going to be that. So yeah, I'm super excited about it. I think it's gonna be fun.
How do you
not fun, but it's gonna be good.
Yeah, it's gonna be super fun to watch a movie about the America that's probably gonna happen in 10 years.
Yeah.
Really good time. How do you feel about all of the positive reviews coming out of South by Southwest? People are calling it a masterpiece and Alex Garland's best film ever.
It's hard not to take that stuff into account. Like, I want to go into it as objectively as possible, but if there were reviews that I had to hear or see, I'm glad this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm glad that at least people are having a positive time with it.
Yeah. Same as you. I'm very excited for Civil War. I cannot wait to see what it is. I've seen the first 10 minutes of it. They played it after Ex Machina, and I hate to break it to you, but it was pretty underwhelming. So I hope that the movie is better. I might have gotten like a 6 or 8 minute like supercut of some stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know. It looked like just one scene. It is easily identifiable as A24's biggest and costliest film. There's like zero question about that right out of the gate. So I am curious to see how that shakes out. Of course, it's going in IMAX screens nationwide.
Yeah.
This is like the Beau is Afraid play here that did not work at the box office. Hopefully, and it's tracking to do well, to do good business on IMAX screens across the country. I am so excited. I think the Alex Garland discourse is coming back and it's going to be absolute vitriol and it's going to be the worst, but it's going to be the best.
Just like men. Yes. very excited about that. Let us know what you guys thought about Problemista. Hit us up. We're on Twitter and Instagram at 24 minutes of A24. You can also follow us on YouTube. We can see our beautiful faces while we talk about this stuff. Thanks everyone for your support. We really appreciate it. I am Ben Lawhorn.
And I am Ethan Simi. Spring break forever, bitches.